Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin Cuthbert, and Ailish Forfar. A reminder, get your wake and rake submissions in. Admittedly, I'm out to sea without a paddle.
This is bad now.
I'm out to sea without a paddle right now when it comes to the wake and rake, but we're nearing the end of the week, so I'll get a two-day reprieve on that. Good old NFL award nominations out yesterday, which is going to hopefully replenish a fading bankroll. We'll talk about that more a little later, but for now, we caught up with Nate Burleson yesterday, of course, of the NFL and CBS, and we started by asking him just how impressive and intriguing the Final Four are with short spread games and big names out on the field.
It really is. And I don't think it was just the NFL that wanted the Bills to be in the AFC Championship game. I think collectively as a country, we were all hoping that there would be a storybook ending to this season, you know, after what happened with DeMar Hamlin, being witnesses to just a scary sight on the football field. It seems like they were writing a script, and the final scene would be them hoisting up the Lombardi Trophy. But the better team won. You have to give credit to the Cincinnati Bengals. They came out and they put their foot down early. They were the faster, dominant, more physical team in that game. And I'm looking forward to what they're going to do in KC. You know, I've oftentimes said that Kansas City is as good as it gets. They are explosive, fast. They're like the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant. They're like Roy Jones Jr. in his prime. But if the Chiefs are Roy Jones Jr., then I guess the Bengals must be Antonio Tarver, because they are not scared when it comes to facing the big, bad Chiefs.
Not scared is kind of the perfect way, I think, to sum up the Cincinnati Bengals, right? And I'm so interested in the confidence and the swagger and the Joe Burrow effect. It seems like it's a constant feedback loop with, like, Burrow giving confidence to others and the others giving confidence right back to Burrow. When you do have that quarterback, though, that is oozing confidence, what does that do for a football team?
It steadies the ship. You know, oftentimes in the NFL, it seems like you hop on this big ship, right, and your quarterback's your captain. And the waters start to get a little rough, and they're crashing up against the side of the ship. And you're just looking for somebody to calm everything down. And I remember a coach once said to me a long time ago, he said, you either look at your captain or you look towards land. If you can see dry land, the land isn't moving. It's just the ship and the water. The land will calm you down. But if you have a good captain on the boat, you don't need to find land. You just know that you'll get there. And that's who Joe Burrow is. He steadies the ship every time that there's something going on in the beginning of the season when they were figuring it out. They didn't really have a preseason. I think Joe Burrow had an appendectomy, and the team had guys that didn't necessarily play in the preseason, so they were literally trying to find their flow while every other team was catching their stride. But I remember Joe early on was basically saying, give us time, we'll be all right. Give us time, we'll be all right. And at the time, it looked like some overconfident young QB who has lived in that space. But as you watch him week by week, you realize he's not faking it. That's exactly who he is. And he's been that way for a long time, dating back to people that knew him in high school, of course in college, and now in the NFL. He got it, man. Joe Cool, Joe Scheisty, Joe Feisty, Joe Brrr. I mean, whatever nickname you want to give him, he embodies that. And for a receiver that sits in a huddle with a QB when the moments matter the most, whether you're up and you need a four-minute drive to milk the clock, or you're down and you need a two-minute drive to win the game, you got a QB that can look you in the eyes, no wavering in his voice, no nervousness in his demeanor. His hands aren't shaking. He just sits there and tells you that everything's going to be all right. You believe it.
Is he a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes right now, injury aside?
Nah, I can't say that. Patrick Mahomes has a Super Bowl. So, I mean, yeah, you could say, you know, he's won the last few meetings between the two guys, but really, is it Joe Burrow versus Patrick Mahomes, or is it the Bengals beating the Chiefs? So let's give credit where credit's due when you're looking at the rest of the team that is helping Joe Burrow. Now, if he beats Patrick Mahomes and goes on to win a Super Bowl, you ask me that question again, I'll have a completely different answer.
Can a team have another team's number? Obviously, you know the record with the Bengals right now. Over the last stretch with the Chiefs, can a team just have another team's number and just know how to beat them?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And oftentimes we look at the X's and O's, and then we'll try to figure out the matchup. What is it about the Cincinnati Bengals team? Is it defense? D line? What about the linebackers? Or is it the secondary that catches Mahomes off guard? Is it the offense that can keep pace with Mahomes and his offense? Sometimes it's the coaching, too. You have a young Zach Taylor who is the perfect coach for this team, because the way that they go through this season, the way that they have walked through this postseason, is a reflection of Zach Taylor. So as much as we want to talk about Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals team, maybe it's Zach Taylor that, as a fan of the game, as a fan, a historian of coaching, maybe he knows exactly what Andy Reid is coming into this game with, and that's why he continues to give him some of his toughest games.
You can't top a Super Bowl, obviously, but in terms of, like, legacy opportunity for a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, I mean, he's overcome Tom Brady. He's overcome the Bills in maybe the most thrilling playoff game I've ever watched. He's done all these things. But if he can beat the Bengals for the first time in four tries on a high ankle sprain in this moment, is this a sort of like, is this a legacy defining moment this weekend here for Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's a moment in time that we'll remember. I mean, he gutted his way through that game, and a high ankle sprain is no joke. And just for people at home, it's tough to come back from a high ankle sprain. Yeah. Now, some doctors would say it's better to have a small hairline fracture than it is to have a high ankle sprain. I think that's going to be the biggest obstacle, is him being able to move within the pocket, because that's such a big part of this offense, him ad-libbing and then stretching these plays out and allowing the receivers to run not one but two routes in one play. But, yeah, he's already done so much. What is it, four out of the last 5 years he's been in the AFC Championship game. He's battled some of the best. He's been to the Super Bowl a couple of times, and he's still fairly young. But if he can win this game, because right now I think there's whispers that the Bengals have the Chiefs' number. Now the Bengals haven't had the same type of success that Patrick Mahomes has had, but he's hearing those whispers. So if he pulls off this victory, we'll be able to remember this as a moment in time, and we'll look back on it at the end of his career.
All right, so Bengals beat up on the Bills, and obviously they were the better team. Bills kind of no-showed. I think it was a disappointment, to say the least. But the storyline going into it was that the Bengals had this banged-up O-line, three of their starting guys. Did they solve that issue, or did they just work around it to beat the Bills?
Well, got to give credit to Frank Pollock, the offensive line coach. You know, to have one guy starting at left tackle for the first time in his career, to have new faces and new places on that offensive line, and then creating a game plan that not only gets the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands sooner so they can catch a rhythm at the offense, but then just putting the pressure on your O-line. It's like everybody's talking about, oh, they got injuries and new guys, and they have to figure out the new rotation, and they're showing graphics of how many different pieces and puzzles were put together throughout the year with his offensive line. I'm pretty sure Frank Pollock and Zach Taylor and the rest of the coaching staff looked at that O-line, walked into the room and was like, y'all going to man up or what? Or will y'all be the group that people get to point to and say, you're the reason why the Bengals didn't move on? And once you put it like that, it doesn't seem that difficult for new guys to come in and do their job. I mean, let's keep in mind, these guys have been playing football their entire lives. So they didn't want to sit back and after the game look at Joe Burrow battered and bruised, and everybody points to that offensive line as them being the reason. I think they fixed it, because it wasn't that they just, you know, played a decent game and gave Joe Burrow a little bit of time. They allowed Joe Burrow to step back and drop back five, seven step drops. And they also allowed Joe Mixon to have a great game opening up holes for him. So they played well. I mean, it's going to be a tougher task against a team like the Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs are bigger and faster on the defensive line. So we shall see what game plan they come up with on Sunday.
Yeah, I think the run game was the tell, right? Because, yeah, Joe Burrow was getting the ball out very, very quickly. It looked like they were scheming it up pretty well. They were getting their receivers open off the line of scrimmage and just doing what they needed to do until they were doing anything they wanted to do, and that included running the ball. Do you expect that, the run game for the Bengals, to be a pretty significant weapon against Kansas City?
You're going to have to run the ball. It's one of their strengths, you know, having that yin and the yang. you know, they can go up top. Jamar Chase is as good as it gets. I mean, whatever you think he is, he's so much more than that, especially when you see him in person. But that's what gets teams in trouble. As soon as you back up and give that defense a little bit of room because you're scared about Jamar Chase or Higgins catching a slant route across the middle and taking it 50 or 60 or a bomb going over the top of your head, that's when they gas you in the run game. And then you're like, okay, all right, now we have to focus on Mixon and P. Ryan. Let's move those linebackers up. Safeties, I need you peeking in the backfield. And then from there, they take that shot over the top. So they really do keep you guessing, and they keep you on your heels. But in a game like this, yeah, man, you're in KC. You want to keep Mahomes off the field. You want to milk the clock as much as you can. And the weather is going to be chilly. They're going to have to run the ball, but that's what they're built for. They did the same thing in KC last year. We were there. CBS has the AFC Championship game every year. And we were there watching the Bengals towards the end of the game really start to break apart that KC defense.
It feels like the pass rush explains everything. The Bills couldn't get it, and now they're not playing this weekend. And it's no coincidence, I think, that all four teams that are remaining in this tournament have strong pass rushers. When it comes to, like, what's important for a football team, is it the quarterback and then the pass rush among things that teams must have in order to have success?
Well, it really depends on the type of offense that you're running. You know, I truly believe if you have a thrower of the football, a guy that can sit in there, traditional quarterback play, drop back, put it on a spot, and he has the ability to negotiate the pocket with his feet and extend plays, you have to have some pass catchers. Like, I'm not saying you got to go out there and get the highest paid wide receiver, but you have to have some explosive guys. I mean, that's why the Chiefs have always been so good. It's like, if this is the NBA, they got three-point shooters, which means they can score from anywhere on the court. Same thing in football. So, yeah, you have to be able to get after quarterbacks and make them uncomfortable. But if you're talking priority, it starts with the QB, and then who is the QB throwing the ball to? Because there's some teams that would just go out there and say, all right, we're not going to stop too many teams on defense, but I know too many teams. I know there aren't too many teams that can outscore us. So, but this is going to be this championship round will be about points being scored in the passing game, like who can take advantage of the passing game, but then also what teams are going to be able to keep their quarterback upright.
So Brock Purdy is going into this weekend just off of Offensive Rookie of the Year nomination as well. How hard is it going to be for him to not look like a rookie in an NFC championship game?
I don't think it'll be that hard. He hasn't looked like a rookie yet. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody keeps waiting for him to drop this glass slipper. Like, it's not happening. This isn't a Disney movie. The dude plays well. And talking with some of his coaches from the past, they're like, yo, he's been this guy ever since he picked up a football. Like, what are we expecting? Now, all of a sudden, the lights are going to be too bright? The only thing that could shake him up will be if he doesn't know how to play well under the bright lights in Philadelphia. This isn't about the moment. He's showed up and showed out in every moment. I mean, the moment was supposed to be too big when he got the nod during the regular season. Then we kept waiting. Nah, we'll see what happens next week. Oh, well, he's playing a tougher defense. Oh, well, the playoffs are a different story. Well, okay, well, let's see what happens when he faces a better defense. He has been the guy that has ran this offense better than any other quarterback the Niners have put on the field this year. Now, I'm not saying he's a better QB than Garoppolo. I'm just talking about this year he has ran the offense better than Garoppolo and Trey Lance. But that's also because, like we just talked about, bringing it full circle, there's guys that he's leaning on. For a young quarterback, your best friend is your tight end. And they got George Kittle. There's a reason why George Kittle was making plays every other game. And then when Brock Purdy got the nod, his stats exploded. Because a young quarterback loves to work with a big target that's an extension of the offensive line, that's going to run routes in the interior of the field and be aggressive at the point of attack. And that was George Kittle. And now you get Deebo Samuel back. I just feel like if there's one thing that's going to rattle him, it would be the Philadelphia fans, which I'm pretty sure they are going to be absolute
maniacs.
The safety blanket is pretty strong for the San Francisco 49ers. If you look around, all around that offense, it's hard to find a weak point, and it's hard to compare really anyone's supporting cast that Brock Purdy has when you look at the final four teams. However, with Philadelphia, it was kind of like a glorified bye week when they're crushing the New York Giants in their first game of the playoffs. How much does that help them prepare for what's ahead? And is there anything to being battle tested and how much that matters? Like, it feels like the Eagles haven't really had a playoff game yet, even though they had a pretty easy one.
Well, it's a good thing because Jalen Hurts is banged up, and then Lane Johnson, who is one of, if not the best left tackle in all of football, he was down, and they need him to protect Jalen Hurts' backside. But, you know, as far as, like, not really having playoff reps or being battle-tested in the playoffs, I don't think it mattered for a team like the Eagles because they've been battle-tested all year. Every single game was another game for us to see just how good this team is. It's one thing to be dominant during the regular season, but for them, they were dominant all the way through. You know, Jalen Hurts is, what, 15-1 in the games that he has started in this year? So he has proven to be that guy. And I think them being healthy, or at least attempting to get healthy, whether it was the bye week or the game against the Giants, it worked in their favor. It's scary that these guys might have everyone at their full disposal up against the Niners at home.
This matchup between some of the best two defenses in the NFL this season, who do you trust more in this matchup?
That's a tough question because the Niners have been good all year. Number one in all of the major statistical categories. I mean, they make quarterbacks uncomfortable in the pocket. But if I'm looking at, you know, a guy that I love and I played with in Detroit, Darius Slay, he's been talking about how the energy is just different and how this defense has stepped up and rose to the challenge. So if I had to give the edge, maybe it's because they're at home, but Darius Slay and the Philadelphia Eagles defense.
What do you think about Nick Sirianni? The no shortage of confidence and swagger, I suppose. The mean mug into the camera in that victory over the New York Giants was interesting, I suppose. I guess I could pose it the way Ailish just did. If you're trusting one coach or the other, Sirianni and Shanahan, what do you think about that matchup?
I love it. I love it. You have one coach who is as cool as the other side of the pillow and Kyle Shanahan. He'll get a little angry every once in a while. You'll see some frustration spill out on camera, but Sirianni is all emotion. It's a guy who's going to let you know what he's feeling, how he's feeling. You'll see it in his body language, his demeanor. He'll scream, yell, stomp if he has to. But you got to understand that coaches do things not for the dramatics or for the camera. They do things for the team to pick up on it. So the team is a reflection of Sirianni. They play a little pissed off. They get annoyed by the disrespect. When they score, they do the same type of mean mug, cross the arms, looking to the camera, as if, what, you didn't expect me to be here? So that's why, you know, Sirianni is a perfect coach for this squad. And Kyle Shanahan, look at Brock Purdy, how he plays. Never gets too high, never gets too low. Even Bosa. You look at the playmakers. Deebo Samuel. He'll flex on you, don't get me wrong. The most animated guy on that team is George Kittle, but I think he would be that regardless of who his coach was. So these are two different coaches with two different coaching styles, and both teams are a reflection of.
Nate, last one for you here. What do you make of the proposed or potential neutral AFC-NFC championship games in the future?
You know, as much as I would love to play indoor in the postseason, now that I'm not playing and I'm a viewer, I kind of like it. If a team from Buffalo or Green Bay, KC, you know, any of these cold weather places, Denver, if they earn the right to host a game in the postseason, a big game, a conference championship game, let them have it. You can't steal that away from that team or that fan base. You know, I think that would be robbing not just the players from a potential home field advantage, but also these fans. They invest everything, blood, sweat, and tears, and, of course, money. And you think they buy these season ticket packages, support their teams, purchase jerseys and travel all over the country, for them to have to leave their city to go to a neutral site, nah, I'm not feeling that.
Joe Burrow's quote after last weekend's game, better send those refunds to those that bought tickets at neutral site AFC Championship game. He's a cool guy, Joe, and he had the quote ready to go last weekend. Nate, appreciate you joining us this morning. Lots to look forward to this weekend. Hopefully we get to catch up pre or post Super Bowl.
No doubt about it. Thanks for having me on.
Nate Burleson, great get as always, a great guest. He's got a lot to break down this weekend. I'm excited for football, even though we'll be able to watch it basically live on Sunday. It's going to be tough.
So how's this go down? I think it's 3-6 are the conference title
3
games?
And 6:30.
And the Leaf game starts when?
5. Whew. Couldn't be worse.
You might not see a snap.
I think that is inaccurate.
You're going to be rushing to prep on Sunday night.
Well, I'll just record everything, I guess.
That nine-day break for you is coming, though.
Yeah. We're good. All right, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
And we teed it up a little bit with Nate, but the NFL award finalists were announced yesterday with the Associated Press. Finalists for NFL MVP, not surprisingly, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Jefferson, and Jalen Hurts. It's kind of the big ticket item, but obviously, offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, comeback player of the year, coach of the year, rookie of the year, blah, 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 blah. But you have one that stuck out to you a little bit. Maybe.
I do think the Associated Press maybe tipped their hand a little bit, including Justin Jefferson and the MVP, because that probably means he's winning offensive player of the year. But you're right. The most interesting thing, I think, and there's a little like speculation of like, is it or not true or is it true? Apparently, there's 5 for the coach of the year, as I think you mentioned there. But then they narrowed it down to 3. There was like a more accurate report with only 3. So there's 5 officially, but maybe just 3. And not included in the 3 was Nick Sirianni. Went 14-3, Philadelphia Eagles. Went 14-1 without a starter, Jalen Hurts. I mean, clearly the best team in the NFC and maybe league-wide the entire season. And Sirianni doesn't get credit for it. It's interesting that
and he mean mugs Shanahan, the cameras. Shanahan, maybe that's why he knew.
Maybe that's why. Maybe they don't like him in the same way that I don't like Nick Sirianni. But I think it's Brian Daboll.
It's not Brian Daboll. We riot.
The job that he did with New York, the Giants, pretty remarkable. I'm just surprised it was Peterson over Sirianni if we're doing a top 3.
Maybe that adds a little bit extra oomph to this weekend.
Little chip on Sirianni's shoulder.
Central.
The mean mugging's going to be out of control.
Oh, he's gonna stare that cameraman into his soul, right to the Associated Press on the other side.
That's exactly it.
Maybe he'll pull some crazy stuff out to show that he's coach of the year.
Maybe he will. He was like setting things up. He was doing these weird things, then calling timeouts, and he was yelling at the ref. He's like, I know what I'm doing with multiple expletives.
He's got something to prove.
It's like I thought he was like overcooking it just a little bit, but we'll see. Maybe I'm just a Sirianni hater, which is true.
We're not going to have time to put our predictions in. When is this announced? Post everything, right?
Feb 9. I think it's right before the Super Bowl.
Okay, so we'll have time before then to maybe place our predictions or break down some of these awards. There's lots to go through.
Yeah, we can do that.
At 8:30, though, when we have Tim McAuliffe, we're going to set some lines. We're going to be the books today. We're going to set some lines on what's going to happen with the Toronto Raptors before the February trade deadline. And we're also going to try to tee up some of the conference championship props. We're going to make them up. But, like, who's going to have the most passing yards, receiving yards, et cetera, looking at the 2 games on Sunday with Tim McAuliffe at 8:30. We have our favorite, Katie Heindel, at 7:30, right over after the break. And then Liam McHugh to talk about Maple Leafs and the Rangers as well. But let's take a break, bring in Katie, talk about maybe one of the most complete Raptors performances of the season. That's next with Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's Baby Friday on the Fan Morning Show. Getting ready for those late night, early turnarounds with the Raptors on the West Coast. Kings last night, Warriors on Friday, Trailblazers on Saturday. Couple 10 p.m. starts. It's the only one we have to deal with this week where we got the morning show right after, because Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of broke our way. We got to be honest. It broke our way.
It did. We're okay with it, but the next guest, Grinder, joining us bright and early on the turnaround. Katie Heindel, NBA writer at Dime, Slam Magazine, and Yahoo Sports Canada joining us. You get some sleep last night, or you're just jazzed up about the Raptors win?
Good morning. I mean, I'll confess, I watched the last half in bed, but yeah, I got some sleep, but I'm feeling pretty juiced after that.
Well, maybe you got some sweet dreams, because it seemed like one of the most well-rounded Raptors games this season, probably their best defensive performance of the year. Is that how you took it as well? Like a little bit of a confidence, positive boost watching that team put together a really good performance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest comparison to me was like, you know, you watch the Kings this season so far, you've seen what it is for a team to kind of be on an offensive string, you know, like they move so lightly with these nice, easy flourishes compared to the Raptors, to put it politely, maybe more plodding to watch so far. But you see last night, like Toronto's defense in full force, kind of throwing that all out the window for like one very needed night for the team, forcing 19 total turnovers, frustrating the heck out of Fox and Sabonis. You know, like the defense is controlled, pretty unflagging. I think like very snappy about getting back and, you know, where they were spending their energy. There wasn't a lot of like Hail Mary kind of play last night, which was really refreshing to see too. And, you know, watching them be able to frustrate Sabonis and Fox, and especially Precious Achiuwa just like draped all over Sabonis for stretches, you kind of see what this adage of like defense wins games actually means, and you know how Toronto can have that be so generative to their offense. And I mean, frankly, it's a little bit like, oh yeah, we're all like rubbing our eyes, I think, a little bit like, this is the team that we recognize and the team that we've been missing.
I feel like it was the Raptors' identity that we thought we'd see all season long, and maybe we expected to see when we had our preseason projections of a team that might be able to make some noise, might be that, you know, as you said, snappy team that can dominate when they play their game. If you're looking at what a Raptors team that you want to see is, that's last night. But I wonder how much you think that maybe the idea of coming to play together on this road trip, they have the trade deadline around the corner. Obviously, there's countless rumors every single day about this guy getting shopped, this guy maybe this. Do you think the Raptors kind of view this as, let's play for each other? You know, we have a lot of tension going on. The media says this and that, but we're on a road trip. Like, maybe there's a little bit of camaraderie and a little bit of team energy that comes from going on the road for so long.
No, I think you nailed it, because like another huge component of the win last night was just this connectivity that I think has been missing. You saw that like 29 total assists, just like a really generous kind of like intuitive communication on the floor. I think, you know, this is the first night out on a 7-game road trip. Obviously, they knew they need all the wins they can get. You know, they were going to come out swinging, but I think it's much different to be able to actually convert that into a win like that. And I mean, aside, Toronto does do pretty well on the road, but everything you said, Ailish, like you pair this with a good chance to get away, I think, from the daily reminders in a place that start to hold a whole new meaning when the trade deadline's looming there. And, you know, you've got rumors kind of swirling around pretty much all your main players. Plus, you get a little more vitamin D than we've been getting at home. I don't think that can hurt. But I just generally think the timing of this road trip, it's good for the team. Yes, it's going to be challenging, but you've only got one back-to-back. The West is a bit of a quagmire, so it's kind of like you're seeing what Toronto can do when they can actually play to the strengths of another team, and if they can keep that up. Like, we're being realistic now, but like you can ask, I think, for a few more wins like that under their belt, and I think just like a good opportunity for guys to get away and clear their heads and just focus on playing.
Katie, you mentioned Precious Achiuwa draped all over Domantas Sabonis, playing really, really well on the defensive end and helping set that tone that really carried them through the game. And he pairs that with a brilliant shooting night, 9 for 12 with 19 points. It's been a good little stretch for him, and it's been a return to health for him. I mean, he missed a good chunk of the season and wasn't right when he came back, or at least it took some time for him to get back up to speed. Does his absence sort of Does it explain the Raptors' struggles a little bit more than, like I was going to say, given credit for? I think no one gave any credit to that. Like, I don't think anyone was really talking about, oh, you lost Precious. That's a big blow. But, like, he was a guy that was, you know, we thought was going to be handed more responsibility, has all this talent. We need to see growth internally if they're going to be a good team. A lot of that could have been on Precious Achiuwa's shoulders. Does, like, his absence, did it really hurt this team maybe more than we gave it credit for?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a pretty, I mean, and right now it's like, you'll take kind of any addition you can get to Toronto. I was laughing because I feel like the last couple times I've been on, I'm like, there's no existential problem. And now it's like, there seems to be a big existential problem. But yeah, like, what a game by Precious Achiuwa last night. I think, you know, to your point, it's what the team's been missing in terms of a much needed offensive spark off the bench. You pair that with his timing and his reads on the defensive and obviously his physicality and athleticism. Like, he's obviously been paying very close attention, I think, to OG Anunoby in the time that he's been out. And, you know, the minutes, like, that he played 28 minutes last night. So it's like, he's obviously really ready to come back. And that's like some much needed, even if it's just like a couple minute stretches here and there, but that gives a much needed breather to some of your starters, especially I think of like Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet. Like, these guys have been playing, you know, 43 minutes a game most nights. So that's going to help spread things around too. And I think a nice thing that I actually thought of last night watching Precious was, I don't know if you remember last season, but like, he had some stretches where he was sort of struggling, kind of trying to put it all together. And now you see him coming back and like really acclimatizing quickly and coming back. It does make me think of the slumps Scotty Barnes has gone through this season and what time and reps and, you know, in-game experience is able to do. And it did make me hopeful, like, he'll be able to do the same thing.
All right, so the performance last night was great, but there's still a lot of rumors about how this next little stretch is going to go. If they've packed maybe a second bag on the road, thinking that, oh, you know, I might be away from home for a lot longer than I thought. Let's start with some of these rumor mills. Let's start with OG. Yesterday, just as I said, every day something comes out, but OG and the idea that he could want out, that there's interest with the Grizzlies and the Pelicans at least, but at least at this point, the Raptors have not made him available, whatever that means. Do you view OG's happiness kind of as the way that the wind blows in this situation? Obviously, he's going to be a red-hot trade target, but do you think he's happy here? I know that's a tough question for you to answer, but like, what do you sense the vibe around OG and the fit on this team, and if he is going to go, how does that make you feel?
I don't put too much weight behind, like, we can't know. There's always also so much going on behind the scenes. So like, yeah, maybe if someone's like having a rough stretch, which like, I don't doubt seeing your name brought up over and over and over again, almost like, I think of like Miles Turner syndrome is what OG Anunoby is facing right now. Just like, his name is everywhere and like in every possible trade that's going to drag on you. But I also think when you look at his like cumulative performance this season and the fact that we've seen, I'm knocking wood right now, but the fact that we've seen him finally healthy for the first time in his whole career for this long in a season, and you see what he's capable of, like, I don't think that, and you're still just scratching the surface basically. So it's surprising to me, this sense that like, he could do better elsewhere, or he might even think that he might be happier elsewhere. Definitely there's like a lot to work out in terms of role responsibility and, you know, like who this team is building around it in the future. But I think you've got someone like OG Anunoby now who is just like showing you what he's capable of and has probably been capable of along, but hasn't had the opportunity to really play this way. I think for him in terms of his career too, like, he's going to look the best against this backdrop. I don't doubt that every team in the NBA wants him and could use him. And there's so many teams that I can think of that, like, you know, you put him on the Bucks. You said you put him in Memphis. Like, those teams become instant title contenders. So, of course, it's lucrative. And it's probably very lucrative for him, too. But he knows the system. He's obviously kind of, like, coming alive in a different way and this season within this system. So I'm sure there's some pains in the team right now. I think that's kind of palpable, but I don't think there's this huge disconnect, especially for a player like OG Anunoby.
Yeah, I don't know how much weight we can put behind the like the latest unhappiness rumor, but there have been happiness rumors with OG for a while now. So it is worth at least paying attention to. But I think the most interesting thing that could be worth paying attention to is what the trade ask could be, or what is, you know, what could be floated the Raptors' direction, because you nailed it. I mean, this is a guy who could really, really change the fortunes of a team that's on the verge. And what I really like, or if you are willing to tear down, what you like about the situation is there's that new teams are knocking on the door, teams like the Pelicans and Grizzlies, who might be like, this is our chance. Let's go. Let's get this player now. It just seems like, you know, if their hand is ever forced, it might be with OG, just because the trade package could be so big, and that he is the most valuable trade asset, at least in my mind, that the Raptors have. Do you agree with that, just based on contract, skill set, and like the ease to which you could move him from one roster to the next?
Yes and no. I think yes, in terms of if you're thinking going forward, you're going to build this team around Scottie Barnes and Pascal Siakam, and those two are your like true two untouchables. But like, it's also a strange situation for the team to be in, because everybody could be traded now. Like nobody, which I hate being like, nobody's safe, but like no one really is. I also would just kind of look at what Toronto's getting back, because yes, I think you're exactly right. This is probably the perfect time for any number of teams to like take that big swing, you know, almost in the way that they saw Toronto take a few seasons ago when they won the title. These opportunities don't come around that often. And also you don't have the great pairing of a team, maybe a little bit more. I wouldn't say the Raptors are desperate, but they're very aware, I think, of where the deficiencies are and who they've got to work with. I would just be a little bit, I mean, I've seen some real pie in the sky, like trade, these are going to break the trade machine, like ideas, but I don't know how much weight there are behind a lot of them.
So they know where their deficiencies are, and that leads us to our next player, which is Gary Trent Jr. and Michael Grainger, Sportsnet reporting that it's not a foregone conclusion that he will be traded. And I guess that makes a lot of sense, because if you know where your deficiencies are, well, it's kind of in the Gary Trent Jr. category. And if they did, if they went ahead and dealt him, I mean, where you would leave yourself with that sort of skill set, I mean, you'd be empty-handed, right? So what do you think about his future? Maybe this is a bit surprising, I think, because we've all had him maybe earmarked for a trade by the end of the season. Where do you see this all headed with Gary Trent Jr.? I guess I'm asking you to look into your crystal ball. But I guess what you make of Grange's report and the long-term fit here with Gary Trent Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's truth to it, I think, especially with, you know, his contract kind of coming up and the front office maybe seeing if they can move that a little bit earlier and see what they can get in return. The sort of catch-22 with Gary, especially when you look at a game last night where, yes, they won and they looked great, but I think they mostly won because of just this, like, defensive connectivity. They were still only 12 from 40 from three, so Gary was supposed to come in and address a lot of the scoring deficiencies. He does sometimes, but it's a little bit hot and cold. So are you trying to, and like that was, I think, the thinking of getting Gary Trent Jr. in for Norman Powell, who could also give you shooting and sort of fits and starts, but did a lot of other things. And the one thing that the team has been critical of Gary this season, though I think to his credit, he stepped up in this regard, but is being more contributive on the defensive end of the floor, being a kind of more well-rounded player, not just coming in and trying to, you know, make shots and get shots up all the time. So he's addressed some of that. Maybe the shooting has kind of fallen off because of it, but I don't really know. You can't, unless you're going to get someone then in return who is a little bit more of a reliable shooter, you're kind of just throwing your shooting out the window. Right, and the Raptors aren't really in a position where they can afford to have that those numbers like take an even steeper dive, because you also haven't necessarily addressed the looming question mark around a center, right? Like, and you see in last night's game again, like what a difference some rebounding finally makes, you know, and your second chance like point opportunities, those have also been missing. So I think it's almost like addressing it sucks to be in this position, but it's like addressing the bleed, what's bleeding the most, you know, and I think who's available to address that immediately. And then maybe you see it in the off season where you can collect the other thing you weren't able to get, because the Raptors aren't going to be able to get everything at this deadline, but they do have to get something. And I think Gary feels the most I hate this language, but like feels the most movable.
Mm. Is that fit Jakob Poeltl? You mentioned a center. You mentioned someone that's good at rebounding that could fit that. I mean, he doesn't have the shooting that Gary Trent Jr. doesn't, and not many do, but.
Fills another deficiency, though.
He does fill that deficiency that you laid out, and he has been rumored to be part of the Raptors' interest for quite a while since he was out of this organization. Is that the fit? Does he make sense?
I mean, I've talked myself into it a little bit more, probably since we all last spoke, but it doesn't. Like, I like Jakob Poeltl. He brings a lot to the Spurs. I don't know that he'd bring the exact same thing to the Raptors because the team is constructed so much differently. I think, yeah, he would definitely address the rebounding question, but he's also not the biggest guy. So there's still nights when you're up against, like, you know, I think of this, a team like the Sixers or the Bucks, even Cleveland to a degree, right, where you're going to be outsized and he's going to get really battered, you know, maybe not to mention posterized, which seems to happen to him a lot too. But I think it's an option. I'm still not entirely convinced it's an upgrade.
You have any hot takes after Fred Van Vliet changes his representation?
I think the timing says a lot about that. I think if you're trying to signal to both, I think a lot of people are reading it as a signal like he wants to leave Toronto, but I think that's a pretty clear signal to the Raptors front office too that he's serious, you know, and maybe they had been talking about a deal behind the scenes, and, you know, that's one way to say, like, all bets are off the table, essentially. Like, we got to start from scratch now. And I think he's in a year and in a position where he can do that. You know, like, his numbers have started to climb up. It's exactly what he said. You know, if you compare his numbers this season to last season, he's on track for the same. He is. He just had a bit of a slump there. So I think the timing of that, his play, the timing of, you know, looking for a new representation, and the timing of the trade deadline, it does light a bit of a fire under the front office, depending what they want to do. And I think Fred knows too, like, he's up for it. Like, you know, his contract's up this summer. Toronto can't really afford to let him go for nothing. So that's why I think there's some urgency to think, like, do you get this deal done with Fred VanVleet at the deadline? There's interest from the Clippers, if you want to believe that. You know, there's interest for a lot of teams, I think, that look at him as a great first option, certainly second option. Again, it's intriguing because there's interest there, and it's a weird place for the Raptors to be in, where, like, everybody's kind of coming knocking, but you don't know who they're going to part with first.
That went from no rush to near panic pretty quickly, at least it seems, with Fred Van Vliet. Throwing aside, like, who could go and rumors and all that stuff, if there are trades that go down, one trade, multiple trades, whatever, what do the Raptors have to prioritize in bringing back in return?
I think they have to decide whether they want shooting or they want to address this gap at the five. You know, like, if you what's going to keep you afloat more? And I think to look at that, you have to look at what are realistic expectations for the rest of the season. I think what we saw last night is a reasonable expectation for what the Raptors' ceiling can be this season. And I do mean that optimistically, because, you know, if you want to see the team get to a place where the defense is driving the offense again, communication gets back to a level we're used to seeing in terms of connectivity between guys. That's a good place to be. It's too late now to make up for the ground that you've lost. You're not going to catch up to the leaders in the East who've pulled away. You can still try and make a bid, you know, at the low end of clinching a playoff spot. And I think that's a good expectation. So I think the urgent need will be figuring out who gets you that. To me, in my mind, it's a center. The fit would be better with the team, how they're constructed already, with the length, you know, the Vision 6'9", whether it's dead or not, I don't know. But it also helps you kind of stop some of the bleeding around the rim, gets you more rebounds, gets the defense and offense more active. Shooting comes and goes, even in the guys you've already got. So I think probably a center fit, I'm begrudged to say, because for a long time I didn't think they needed it, but now I'm like, they could really use it. It could help.
It could be time to go more traditional in terms of the construction, maybe the end of the Vision 6'9". We'll see. A couple more days/week until the trade deadline. Lots of late night games until then. Katie, appreciate you joining us this morning. Get some rest and we'll chat soon.
Thanks so much, guys. You too.
Katie Eindel, NBA writer at Dime, Slam Magazine, and Yahoo Sports Canada. Raptors back in action against the Golden State Warriors. I don't know how my mom will be able to handle it. Juliana and Markham, it's going to be tough for the two of them to see where their heart lays in these games. But that's Friday night, 10 p.m., kicking off your weekend.
It's a big one for your family, both biological and the community we've built here at the Fan Morning Show. Interesting, I think one, because we're trying to ask the what's the most important question for each player when dealing with the future? Gary Trent Jr. is an interesting one because it's like, okay, if you trade him, you have nothing. You don't have anything that even resembles a Gary Trent Jr. You don't have any shooting. But just because you'll have less of something, it doesn't mean that you should pay Gary Trent Jr. all the money in the world, market value, whatever, right? Because you got to be really confident when you're giving out contracts. You got to be really confident that this could be a player that could be a part of a winning formula for you moving forward. Are they, or they're just like, wow, we don't have any shooting, so let's give our shooter all the money. Like, I don't know if that's the best way to go about things. So I think that's one of the things they have to consider, something to chew on for the next week, 10 days or so before the trade deadline.
It's exactly 2 weeks away. We'll have probably a rumor a day. So stop us if you heard this before, but someone has interest in somebody on the Toronto Raptors. Day.
It's all right. It's all right. Good deal.
All right, let's take a break. And we mentioned it, the text line, the family. Send that in at 590-590. Where's Neil? Neil, we need you, buddy. We got a couple in there right now, but your Wake and Rake submissions for tonight. No Raptors, no Maple Leafs. You can choose from wherever your heart desires. We're going to get one, Justin.
I need a paddle. I need a life preserver.
We'll take
one of those rings.
Like a lifesaver?
You know those rings that they have by the pool?
Yeah, isn't that called a lifesaver?
Oh, I need one of those.
Okay, we'll get you one. On the other side of the break, Liam McHugh, studio host at NHL on TNT. Let's talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs and the New York Rangers, an original six matchup on a snowy Wednesday night. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.